Welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is he usually likes lady criminals. I think his name is Joel Flynn.
I'm also a spectacular tap dancer, but you can't tell because you only see the top half of me usually. Yeah, it's Joel. I'm not a lawyer at all. Yeah, how dare you?
You told me you were.
I just give legal advice. I know.
Okay. And your normal rate is $5,000.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so Joel, we're finally getting to the Chicago episode that for a while you've been, jokingly not looking forward to. I wasn't sure.
Sure, let's go with jokingly. I feel like one of the reasons I was apprehensive is because I feel like when Chicago came out and then there were some other musicals that came out around the same time period, and there was a certain person that was like, oh, we can't wait to go see the new musical in the theater. I was like, I don't know if I'm excited about any of this stuff. Oh, it's going to be great. Like, I got to go. I don't know. So some sort of bias from the early 2000s, but
okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Luckily for you, our guest picked Chicago out of all the potential things. So you got stuck with it.
Yeah, it's fine. I've seen it.
Okay. Then our guest this episode is Alexandria Daniels, a.k.a. Film and Vinyl.
Hello.
Hey.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So, of all the movies to pick, what made you want to pick Chicago?
It's actually one of my favorite musicals on film. yeah, I remember seeing it when I was a kid, and I just fell in love with musicals again after that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, I was raised like in a household that just loved musicals and music and movies and all that. So, and I was like at a time where I was starting to, I think I was in theater or no choir at the time. I was in high school, and just to get inspired, I just watched this movie that my mom had picked up on DVD, and I just fell in love with it immediately.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember when this came out. I was 11. Yeah, I was 11, and I remember the trailer coming on TV a lot, but I remember like having no interest, but just remember it being a big deal at the time. And
yeah, it was. It got so much like attention. I remember especially during the award season, it was crazy.
I think it was the first best picture winner I could remember, because all the ones before that were like Chicago was an easy name to remember. And when I learned, I caught on to like, oh yeah, Chicago, it won Best Picture. And so that was like kind of a random fun fact. I remember people asking about movies for a long time. But Joel, do you remember when this came out? Like, were you, well, I guess you weren't excited for it, but did you see it at the time?
No, I didn't. I didn't see it at the time. I don't know. Hold on a second here. Sorry, somebody came to the front door. I feel like I had friends that were like ready to go. Like they couldn't, like I said, that couldn't wait to see this. I mean, the same, what was the, oh, Moulin Rouge. When did that come out?
My sister was obsessed with it. I'm familiar with it.
See, I think that like, there was like this carryover, action or, you know, like wave of like, oh yeah, it's going to be great. The musical thing like that. And, you know, now I've seen it. I waited a long time, obviously. And I don't think I would have hated it seeing it on the big screen or anything like that. And I don't hate it now. That's not the case. It's just, didn't seem like my type of thing. And I was trying to figure out why in particular Chicago didn't interest me. And I think it's because I don't like music from that era. Yeah. Cause like in this movie, I really dug the dancing scenes. Like, I really dug Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger. Like, giving it appeared like they were giving it their all in all the scenes that they were in and stuff like that. And of course, the amazing Queen Latifah. She got, like, Best Actress for this, right? Anyways.
She's nominated for it.
Yeah, and, like, I enjoyed those parts. It's just...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyways. I'd like to hear what the guest has to say. Defend your... No, just kidding. You don't have to defend anything. I'm the one with a problem. You know?
It's funny because I'm actually not a big fan of Moulin Rouge. I'm willing to admit that. I never... When I tried watching, I just couldn't get into the story. Whereas Chicago is so scandalous and it was so much energy, it just got my attention immediately. I love the energy with this.
How you seen it on stage, Trevor?
No. Unfortunately, I never saw any Broadway musical on stage. I cannot afford to do so. It's all the way in New York, and I'm all the way in California. I just love the energy of all the cast and the music. It was just so catchy. It was just so... It's like kind of like bouncy in a way. You know, it's like just like always like right on beat and everything. And... I'd never seen anyone like Catherine Zeta-Jones or even Renee Zellweger just be able to dance on heels, for goodness sake. But that's hard to do. I never saw that on film either. Like, I was just a kid just being mesmerized by all that. But I love the, not just the dancing, but I also love the production design too. It just captured the jazz era at that time. And I just never seen that portrayed before. And it kind of made me kind of wish I could live back at that time just to see what it may have been like. And but I thought it just talked about fame and this obsession with like true crime and seeing how corrupt the system can be pretty well. So, but yeah, I like this
movie. I got kind of weird vibes of like Natural Born Killers in broad strokes of like celebrating criminals. And then there's like in my notes, we're talking reality TV, because there's like a like kind of a like the way they're covered in a newspaper, it feels like how reality TV is treated now. Like there's this whole lot of very universal things about this, like modern society and fame, and like how we celebrate criminals and people with big crazy personalities. Like I. Going into this, I had no idea what it was going to be, and like I thought it was like this. Like, it was going to be something like closer to Showgirls or something, where it's like, oh, she has a stage show and everything. I had no clue it was going to be. Oh, she's in prison the whole movie, basically.
Yeah, she basically doesn't. They basically don't have any sort of show except for in the very beginning. And at the very end, like, no, everything else is in their mm-hmm. imagined world, which it's like, by the end, I was like, can Renee Zellweger even sing? Like, her character is always fantasizing about singing and stuff like that. And I know the actress can, but can Roxy
mm-hmm.
actually perform? I'm not sure. Like, I was expecting there to be a scene where she was trying out for something and she was like really bad at it. But she'd always imagined herself being amazing. Of course, that's not what happens, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you guys know about the history of the play?
I saw that the 1975 original was a Bob Fosse production.
So...
Yeah, it actually is based on an original play that came mm-hmm. out in 1926 by a woman named Maureen Watkins, I believe. Yeah. She was a journalist that actually worked for the Chicago Tribune. And so the play is like loosely based on her experiences covering those cases.
Yeah, and I guess this is a remake, technically, because it was made as a movie in 1927 by Cecil B. DeMille. I don't know mm-hmm. if it's... Yeah, the play. So it wasn't a musical until Fosse and Fred Ebb did the book in 75. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that original author, Christine Baranski's character, was supposed to be like a, you know, a version of her.
Yeah, I guess back in those days, those journalists would be covering these cases where women were constantly being acquitted of crimes that I think they know for sure that they were guilty of, but they would sensationalize the women, how they looked, how they acted, how they were felt like they were kind of like transformed because of the culture at the time in Chicago with jazz and liquor and all that. And yeah, her character was very similar to her in real life. But that's what she did, especially with these two particular women that Roxy Hart and Velma Kelly are based on specifically. I think for Velma Kelly, I forget her name. I think her name is Bellevue. Let me see if I can find her name real quick because I wrote it down.
There's a Roxy Hart movie from the early 40s with. Shit, I didn't write down who starred in it. But this is, I guess, like, was to be the third film version of Chicago then, because the one in the early 40s, it's called Roxy Hart with
Yeah, that's the one with Ginger
Ginger Rogers,
Rogers.
that's it.
And
And there's Night of the Roxbury, which is also. No? No, never mind.
Oh.
I was going to say, Christine. I mentioned Christine Baranski. She's like one of my favorite actresses. Like, she's always popping up in little roles and being hilarious, but she was also on The Good Wife and The Good Fight, which is currently going on.
Wait, was she in the Grinch movie with Jim
Yes, she
Carrey?
was.
Yeah, she
She's
was.
amazing in it,
That's like
despite the movie.
That's one of the few things I remember from that movie.
I liked
Oh,
her in
yeah.
it. I thought she was funny.
Sorry,
I
she
haven't seen that
livens it
movie
up, you know.
since. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie since I was 10. I don't know if I want to revisit it or not.
That's a musical. Boom.
Is
I think so. Pretty sure.
it?
Yeah, there's some singing in there.
Okay. I guess it might be halfway decent.
No, what, the movie?
I
No,
don't
oh hell no.
know. Yeah, the movie. Oh, okay. Well, I was 10. I thought I was
Mm-hmm.
really cool because when you're 10, Jim Carrey is everything.
Yes, that is true.
But,
No, not the same way until I saw it.
Yeah, so I think this should be pointed out that that Chicago 2002 is Rob Marshall's first film, and he won the Best Picture with his first film, which is pretty fucking crazy.
What did he do previously?
He is a theater guy. He's like,
Yeah, he's known for choreography. He also choreographed all of Chicago too.
and that just gave him free rein to do whatever the hell he wanted. Great. I mean,
He went on
Yeah,
to,
pretty much.
yeah, he did Into the Woods. He did Mary Poppins
He did
Returns, and
nine.
He did nine.
Which I didn't realize
And
that
he.
that was something before the movie came out. I was like, seriously, somebody wrote a musical based on 8.5 and it's coming out this year? That's crazy. Like, no, nine existed before the movie. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I apologize to the people I insulted that don't exist.
Yeah,
He's also going to do the new Little Mermaid movie. It's supposed to come out, I guess, in
yeah.
a year or so.
Oh, that's con
I'm not sure.
that's controversial
Not
because,
sh
you know, they cast a black woman as Ariel, and that's quote unquote
I'm all for
bad.
it, even though I'm not a big fan of Little Mermaid.
Everyone knows
Yeah.
fish women are traditionally now. It's so stupid.
My favorite part of the whole thing was the sci-fi author Nnedi Okorafor did a like Twitter thread about black mermaids in African mythology in response to it, which is pretty fucking cool. There's like a whole history of it. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I just find the whole argument that a black woman can't play these Disney characters is completely ridiculous. I thought it was perfectly cast because I'm a fan of Chloe and Halle. Those women are really good singers. I think they're only like in their 20s, but they're amazing singers. So, and she looks the part, and
Yeah,
so I think
I mean,
it's
they're gonna
great.
knock it out of the park. We'll see what happens with Rob Marshall.
Yeah, I mean, he has a good track record so
I
far.
mean, no, nine was
Nine.
not received well.
Yeah, besides
And
nine, like.
what?
They did Memoirs of a Geisha as well.
On Stranger Tides, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Is that the one with Javier Bardem?
It's the one with Penelope Cruz.
On that note, this 2002 was when Almodóvar won his second Oscar. This one for Best Screenplay for Talk to Her. Anyway, so I guess we should get into the movie. So the movie was one of the things I always knew about this was that it had John C. Reilly pre-comedy, and I've only seen him in Boogie Nights pre-comedy, and I think that's the only thing. And seeing him here, it's like, cause I always heard like, oh yeah, he gets nominated for an Oscar or whatever, but then seeing it's like, oh yeah, I see why he was nominated for an Oscar for this. And it's just like he's like I don't know why I was surprised. Like I'm always surprised to see him in serious stuff. But it's like, oh yeah, he can be a really great dramatic actor too. Besides being hilarious, like he can do everything.
That's how I feel about the entire cast. It's like they're all triple threats in a way. You know, I mean, even to see Richard Gere stand up and sing and dance. Like I remember seeing him in Autumn in New York, and I was like, this seemed like a serious dude. And I'm like, okay, I didn't ever saw you sing and dance. I was just a kid at the time, but I was like, I didn't know all these people can sing, and they all sing and danced very well, including John C. Reilly. That's actually my first time seeing him sing and dance ever.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him sing or dance in it. I mean, he kind of sings in Boogie Nights, right?
And Walk Hard he sings, but it's like kind of a joke at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, some of that stuff
with the two women.
I mean, you could explain the story in about 2 minutes. I don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You want to get to start by the story? We could do that. Okay.
All right. So it's about a young woman who is in prison and everyone calls her Mama. She is the main character of the movie, played by Queen Latifah. And then some white people show up and it sucks. And then Lucy Liu is on screen for 2 minutes, and I'm so upset because I was like, hell yeah, Lucy Liu. Wait, where's she going?
Yeah.
I love the cameo.
Yeah, it was a tease. Like, oh, is she going to sing and dance? No.
It was a tease.
Nope.
I'm upset. okay, so in reality, Catherine Zeta-Jones plays Velma Kelly, who is already a well-known dancer. And in the beginning of the movie, we see her having just committed a crime, we assume, wiping blood off her hands. And she's quickly whisked away to jail. Renee Zellweger is a young lady who is sleeping around on her husband, you know. Oh, yeah, I don't know. With Dominic West, which means, of course, with Dominic West. Who wouldn't do that with Dominic West? Anyways.
It's McNulty.
Yeah, exactly.
He took a vacation from Baltimore because shit got too hot.
He's gonna have to use the English accent with me, otherwise.
Yeah, that's how all Americans sound.
Anyways, Dominic West has promised Roxy, that's Renee Zellweger's character, that she's gonna be famous as long as they keep knocking boots. And one day he gets tired of it, tells her that it was all bull crap in the first place, so she takes out a gun and shoots him rightfully. She gets arrested. Her husband, what is John C. Reilly's name?
Amos.
Yes, Amos is very confused. At first he pretends that he's the one who did the crime, then he realizes she was cheating on him, so Renee Zellweger gets put in the slammer. Mama seems to run the block, that's Queen Latifah, and basically there is a celebrity lawyer that is working with Velma at first, and that's Richard Gere playing Billy Flynn, who gets wind of Roxy And he's able to twist her story into something for the newspapers and, you know, get Roxy's eating up the, you know, being a celebrity. And it goes, you know, ups and downs. She, at one point, I didn't know this part. Like, is she pretending? She's pretending to be pregnant. It turns out she's not pregnant, right? Cause she,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not really pregnant.
So, yeah, because... At the end, she definitely doesn't have a baby. Okay. But, you know, twisted like, oh, she's pregnant. Oh, you can't hang a pregnant lady. A lot of people throwing out, we're going to hang her kind of thing going on. And eventually there's a big trial. She gets declared innocent and everything resets. She's a nobody once again. She's no longer the hot murderer of the week. And Velma somehow gets out of jail. I assume she murdered all the guards and left. She probably got declared innocent also. And they, at the end of the movie, they decide to do a double act. And everyone loves it.
And credits, which is this is a reel of all the best parts. The
credits basically were, hey, remember when this happened? Yes, I just watched the movie.
But I like that they had like the they had show the name over the person, which I think more of we should do that.
Oh yeah, yeah, I do like that.
Have your name in a marquee,
like a picture of the person, have their name over it, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so it's you know it's a classic tale that's nearly this play is nearly 100 years old too, which is kind of crazy.
It's
yeah. And what's even better is that it's based off of two actual criminals. That it's when you look up these two women, it's very similar to what actually happened in real life.
You know, it's not historically accurate because nobody was complaining about any STDs. But yeah, I guess you can leave that out of your musical dance movie.
Yeah, I found it hard to take notes because I was so like. Mesmerized by all the dance sequences. Because during those sequences, I was like, well, I can't really describe what's going on, but, like, it's beautiful and amazing. Mm. And, like, it's just, like I really did like this. Like, I was a little worried maybe it might be, like, not aged too well. Because I was expecting it to... I don't know. I was expecting it to be maybe closer to like Shakespeare in Love, which where it's fine but forgettable.
Yeah.
And this is not that at all. This is like a really fun, like a poppy musical, and it's not. Okay.
I love it. It is a great poppy musical.
I love that you love it.
Okay.
I'm all about you loving the movie. It's for me in particular. I'm the doofus here. It's just
okay.
I don't know. I need a little bit more story. This was like the reason you couldn't take notes is because you had a 2-minute window in between each song or dance number to get anything down.
Yeah,
and it wasn't. You know, most of the time that was a, you know, two people room information exchange kind of thing. And then all of a sudden that person, one of the people that was talking would be on a stage flashing back and forth between being in prison, at, you know, at a courtroom, whatever else kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's done really well.
Yeah, yeah.
I took quite a bit of notes, mainly just on how manipulative these characters are. It's like, it's ridiculous. Like, despite the, you know, the catchy songs, I think it's just really well written, you know? If anything, it's a very simple story, you know? Maybe that can turn some people off. But I enjoyed, like, just hearing some of the clapbacks and just how simple they can be. I mean, when Velma Kelly shuts down Roxy Hart, you know, she's like, just keep your hands off my filthy underwear, okay? Keep your hands off my underwear. And then immediately spins around when Roxy begins getting her attention. And you see Velma Kelly just getting completely jealous. And then it just comes back around. It's like, oh, lay off the caramels, basically, because now that your fame is gone. But if anything to take note is when it comes to Chicago, it's just how, you know, sex, celebrity is what gets people talking, even in the justice system, and since it's so corrupt.
You know, they had an emphasis on, like, when Billy was laying out her, the way she was going to play her part to seem sympathetic, they had this whole, like, staying away from the flapper lifestyle, the booze and the sex and whatever else is going on.
Jazz and liquor.
Let this be a cautionary tale. And it's like, we didn't really get to see that part. And I guess you could kind of... extracted from the scenes that were taking place in, you know, the big theaters and stuff like that. But, it's, you know, we're not seeing booze play. We're not seeing gambling or anything like that. The seediest part is in the very beginning when Dominic West and Renee are screwing around.
Yeah, that was more, it wasn't graphic, but like.
I mean, it was, I wasn't expecting it. So,
yeah, I was expecting it to be as like loud and as aggressive as it
was.
Yeah,
my monocle popped off.
But you don't see. Yeah, like when, at that part, like, is this rated R? That does not seem like a PG-13 sex scene. But also, it's Bob.
It could have been a lot more graphic, and I kind of wish it did, but. But I don't know, would that throw everything off?
Simulated cut. No, I don't want to see that. Never mind.
I mean, it's Bob Fosse, so sex is everywhere because everything he made was about sex. Mm-hmm. Gerald, so what's your beef with this movie? What doesn't connect with
I mean, exactly? I don't have a beef so much as to say that I just don't... I loved the experience of seeing the actors and actresses performing, like I just seeing Renee and Catherine. Do you guys mind if I call you that? No, okay. especially in that last dance number. It's like, holy crap, that must have been so much fun for them to do, and you know them performing and singing and I think I remember. Something about Renee, like, really wanting the part, and, like, they didn't think she was right for it, and she was, somehow insisted herself until they were like, oh, okay, actually, she's perfect for this. And, like, that way, I feel like there is a lot of good things in the movie, but as a movie itself, like, I don't know if I'm ever gonna, I'm probably gonna end up re-watching it for other reasons, you know. That sounds weird. For podcast reasons. But
do you like women thighs? Is that why you're going to watch this movie?
I like thighs just as much as the other person, but that's not...
Okay.
You know, I'm okay.
Okay. Well, Joe, I'm going to tell you what the other Best Picture nominees this year were.
Sure.
It was Lord of the Rings, Two Towers.
Okay.
The Hours,
okay.
Gangs of New York, and The Pianist. Do you like any of those movies more than this one?
I like The Pianist better. I hate Roman Polanski, but...
Well, who doesn't?
Same. I haven't seen all of Gangs of New York because it's like 17 hours long. What were the... Oh, Two Towers is great, but it's the middle movie. What was the last one?
The Hours.
Oh, the Hours Moore is good, but one. It's so depressing. I mean, I can't say that was Chicago. Yeah. So if I had to pick from those five, I probably would have picked The Pianist, which once again is super depressing, but it's kind of it's an important depressing. Like, it's about something that people need to know.
But Chicago is also about, like, you know, what Alexander was saying. It's about like crime and sex and like, you know, the media, and that's a universal thing that's always that will always be. And it's just a story that you can tell in any era.
Right.
It's very relevant, even now. When I was rewatching it, that's what I kind of realized. It's like, no matter what crime, but not every crime, but, you know, those, like, high-profile, you know, crimes that would take place, whether it be, like, Jomini Ramsey or, you know, any other high-profile case, you know, you see, like, the media constantly talking about it, and it's always in our face. And, you know, when you look at Chicago, of course, it's taking a criminal, making them look like a celebrity, but it's kind of the same thing. The audience and the media, we become, at least in America, we become really fascinated by these crimes. So we inadvertently make them celebrities in a way, because we're constantly talking about it.
Like, yeah, but he left America because he's guilty, and like
no he is irrelevant. I feel like,
yeah, it's just like, I don't know,
but the story is really important. Like, the pianist is an important story to learn about, you know.
Yeah,
just not work.
Yeah, unlike Lord of the Rings, they didn't put me asleep.
I don't know how their brains work.
Yeah, I know about that.
I like the Two Towers, except when it came to the Battle of Helm's Deep. Like, as cool as it was, it felt like it felt so long at the same time. So, I remember being that kid, I kind of fell asleep during that at one point.
Yeah.
But still being mesmerized by the entire picture.
I can't disagree with that. It's compelling in a weird way that, like, war is not displayed usually in movies. It's like, yeah, there is this kind of tedious waiting part to it. Like, especially when they're potentially doomed in that movie. But, yeah. Not enough dancing in the Two Towers. Say that.
Watching this, it made me think of Sucker Punch, where it's Sucker Punch is like the shitty version of this, where, like, Sucker Punch, it takes place, you know, like, a bunch of women who are stuck in a place, in that case, an asylum. I don't remember much of that movie. And, like, they have these fantasies that correspond with real life. And they're, like, cut in between. It feels like Zack Snyder kind of took the Chicago formula and was like, oh, I can do that. But then if you see Sucker Punch, it's like, no, he can't do this.
Right. The only memo he got was the thighs memo. So do you have, like, songs memorized from this movie?
I know the Cell Block Tango.
Oh, yeah.
Almost by heart. let's see, the Cell Block Tango. I still kind of like, no, not Razzle Dazzle, but They Both Reach for the Gun. Mm-hmm. Like, that song's kind of fun to sing as well.
Yeah, I can't remember. Oh, it's Cell Block Tango. There's a part in that dance sequence where you see a bunch of women in silhouette in the background. And I'm pretty sure that's a direct reference to Gold Diggers of 1933. Because there's a sequence in that musical, I can't remember who's in it, where there's a bunch of women in silhouette. And that musical is also, like, very sexual and on the nose with, like, the innuendo.
I mean, the Gold Diggers.
There's even, like, this really... Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a really... Well, the story... parts, the non-musical parts aren't as interesting.
Yeah.
But it's worth it for the musical parts. You know, so, like, what are your guys', like, favorite sequences, like, dance numbers or songs in this?
Yeah, the Cell Block Tango is still, like, my number one. Not gonna lie, I kind of danced to that in my living room when I was a kid, because it was just so much fun to see all those women, like, kind of come together and sing about why they thought it was a good idea to kill their lover or husband or whatever. But as I was researching the scene, how it's choreographed, when they pull out the red scarf, they actually pull out the red scarf according to where the blood was on their fingers.
Right. That's what I assumed. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. When.
Yeah. Like when I was researching that, I was like, that is like a choreography. Mm. I never knew that before.
Yeah,
that I did not pick up.
Except for the Russian girl with the white. She's the only one that actually shows that she's actually innocent of everybody else.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And she's the one who gets hanged.
Yeah.
I think the movie says hung, but whatever. It doesn't matter. Mm. Mr. Cellophane, I really enjoyed because John C. Reilly finally got to do something besides be a sad husband.
And dopey.
Yeah.
He did his own makeup, too, in that scene. Apparently he's a fan of clowns.
Oh.
And he did his own makeup and everything. Like, on camera and for the entire dance. He did it.
Like the puppet one, that one like bordered on creepy at times with like this weird like puppet face paint.
It did, but it was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
It was.
And like, and you see Billy above controlling them.
Yep.
Which was a really mm-hmm. cool effect.
Yeah, I guess I'm sorry.
I like Catherine Zeta-Jones. Number when she was in a jail cell with Roxy trying to get her to dance with her to
kind of take over her sister. And she would do this part and I would do this part. Mm.
Yeah, I can never, I simply cannot mm-hmm. do it alone. Mm-hmm. That was a song. Yeah, like the scene where she was dancing on the chair, that looked so painful too. Like, I can't, like, how many did she fall at all? Like, that seems like that's insane. But that choreography, I thought was very cool.
Oh, yeah, that.
And
I don't know. I think the puppet one might be the only one I'm kind of iffy on because I just find puppets creepy, and like the makeup was a little too effective, which I guess is a compliment in this case.
I did not like the tap dancing thing at all because it was not. The coolest thing about tap dancing is watching the performer go through the motions, like seeing that agility and kind of acrobatic thing that they have to do in order to do that. And because it's mixed in with this court scene thing, we kept cutting back and forth between, you know, him on the darkened stage, which I don't know how much was him and how much was another person. There were plenty of times where it was in shadow or it was just shot from the feet down or, you know, from the waist down or, and stuff like that. And it, like, that's not interesting to me. You know, like, I don't know what how they could have done the number a different way, but did not work for me at all.
I wasn't really a big fan of the Roxy number when she was talking about how happy she is that she's a celebrity now. It's like, you know, you really get to see her personality in that number. So I was like, oh.
Kinda, she's pretty devious, yeah.
Actually, when I was listening to the song, her first number, I think it was called Funny Honey, when she is like an ode to Amos. It's like, are you sure it's an ode? I mean, you're kind of saying how dumb your husband is, and you just killed a guy that you had an affair with behind his back. Like, that's kind of narcissistic. It's like, you're not that likable.
Yeah, that's an interesting part. Like, she, like, there, we are supposed to have sympathy for her actions in the beginning. I mean, this asshole was just lying to her and, you know, shooting. I feel like that's a perfectly natural reaction for anybody, honestly. Killing a bastard like that, yeah. But then she is, it seems like she is very, very selfish. You know, like all the musical numbers and all her actions during the rest of the movie, it's like, I don't think I like this person by the end, you know? It's like, I don't, what, Chicago, is that okay? I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone is the good person except for Amos.
Yeah, just Amos.
Yeah.
Because
he's the one that's being used as a pawn between everybody, between between Billy Flynn, Rox, and the media and all that. He's been being used. Like, just pretend you're going to divorce her. It'll give her more sympathy. Like, and he's being all kind and trying to get money to make sure she has the best lawyers.
Yeah, and Mama, who never took advantage of anyone and only did, you know, try to help people out. She's a good person. Won't hear otherwise.
Well, she has to keep her power somehow.
Mama knows how to work the system. That's the thing about her character. I love her number, though. That's one of my favorite numbers.
Sorry. What were you saying?
No, I said that Queen Latifah's number in the film is one of my favorites as well. Like she knows how to work the room. She has so much energy, and I love her voice. She gets everyone's attention, and it's like it's quick witted. She's maternal, but at the same time, she's really corrupt. Yeah. You know, the song is about what Mama can do for you as long as you know what to give me, which is money, and then I can help you out.
Yeah, I like that she was like, besides Amos, had no allegiance besides if you can pay her, then she will help you, and if you can't pay her, then you're out of luck. And I always like those characters the most because I feel like those are ones that are like most interesting to follow, just to see like where they fall throughout, you know, throughout a story. And this one in particular, just like, you know, she's the smartest person in the whole movie, and I guess like the only downside is she stays in this exact same place. Because that's how that's how that type of character goes. But okay, I found something in my notes that so they talk about hanging people in this, and I used to work at an assisted living home, and during the hanging of the Russian woman, you see it's public, and like it's a huge public event. And I remember at the home I used to work at, there were some of the residents told me one day that, it's like four or five of them, that as a kid, their parents would take them to public hangings for fun.
Yep. Gotta entertain your family somehow.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just great. I never heard of anyone doing that. And also, I didn't know Jell-O was doing hangings for that long. But it was just like apparently a common thing for like this, a huge crowd of people would go to public hanging.
That would traumatize me in a heartbeat. Like, I was like, Mom, Dad, why'd you bring me here?
I think maybe that was why their parents took them, so they would not want to commit crime later on.
Talking about the hanging, the execution stuff, I believe. And I think maybe part of why I like this movie so much is my personal family history when it comes to jazz in the 20s. Because I'm interested in a Malcolm X episode. My great-grandfather's cousin, played trombone for Ellington.
Is he on any of those videos of Duke Ellington that they have? Do you know?
I've looked, and I don't know if I'm sure if I've seen him or not. And my grandfather played jazz, played piano for like Billie Holiday and Count Basie, some other people.
So you feel personally connected to the murderers?
Yes, and just like the music and the scene. Yeah, just anything like about like old timey jazz, like love of this, because like I am related by blood by lesser known figures from that era, and I had other family members too that were involved. That it's my mom's side of family, and I. I take it the end is supposed to be real, that they're super successful now.
I mean, who can say?
That's how I take it. Yeah. I mean,
Like, Queen Latifah's in the audience, so.
I took it as it was a real performance, because in real life, where the two characters are inspired by, they both got acquitted from their crimes. So it just kind of shows like where they are after the trial, like where all the fame just went away. But of course, Velma still got, you know, something up her sleeve. It's like, let's just work together. So we okay. get our fame back.
Yeah, that ending also, like, I guess kind of nitpicky about the ending. Like, some of the editing was a little too much in the ending, where, like, I wanted to see their full dance moves, and, like, it's a little too fast for editing. It looked like there are...
I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. they probably had to do it 100 times.
Yeah,
but once. I mean, I think this is also the first time it's those two out there just dancing like crazy. It's not a staged production. I mean, it is, but compared to the other ones where it was like these fantasy sequence where things were, you know, coming out of the ground and people were appearing out of the shadows and stuff like that, effects and stuff like that. This was actually the two actresses just, you know, going, you know, on their feet doing it. I thought it was really cool.
I really like the number, despite the messy editing somewhat, but I like the dance moves and everything, all the lights, and seeing people from the trial show up, I mean, Mama Morton's on the audience and Billy Flynn's on it. I was like, yeah, those people that get away from murder. Like, it's kind of a funny scene, but because you can't believe, like, wow, they actually got away with it. You know,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, they're back in the spotlight.
See any real connections between this and 25th Hour besides, like, I don't know.
Well,
clubs,
prison, right?
Yeah, prison.
Going to clubs. Also, the crime of the century, right? Like, they was treating like her big thing as the crime of the century, and the 25th Hour is like haunted by the action, you know, of 9/11. So there's kind of an overhanging thing on there that fits up in a different way, because it's not like celebrity born of a crime. It's something that affected the entire country, and it's not forgotten the way that these ladies would have been forgotten. And moved on to the next person, right?
Yeah, same thing. Other movies came out in 2002, and I'll let the guests go first, unless you have some last words when it comes to Chicago.
Me or the guest?
The guest.
Oh, of course.
About, you know, celebrity, and, you know, I used to watch it 10 years from now and it'll still be relevant.
Yeah, unfortunately.
The War Photo. And the 1 hour photo is directed by Robin Williams, plays Flipper, and he's been developing this family's photos for years. He gets in with the family and tries to, you know, get closer to them, basically. And it's wonderfully shot, and I think great, like, dramatic role that reflect. It's very, because it's so different from his, like, but this will kind of make you feel like he was a great actor for, he was a really great actor in drama. And my second film is... Have you seen it before?
No. I remember seeing it at Blockbuster all the time. I think I was scared to watch it as a kid.
The other film was Bend It Like Beckham. Now, this is a soccer film, but it's very funny. And it talks about everything from racial discrimination to social norms. It's about an Indian girl who is a fan of David Beckham, and she loves playing soccer. She ends up joining her school soccer team, girls' soccer team, and begins with one of the girls, played by Keira Knightley, Deshaun Bond, and the girl ends up also having a crush on her soccer teacher, like her coach, her soccer coach. And the film deals with everything from how Indian, like, it talks about Indian culture in the film as well, and how they deal with, like, racial discrimination within, like, in England as well. So you learn more about Punjabi culture. You also see, I'm trying to understand her. Sorry about that. Yeah, it deals with like interracial relationships and also deals with LGBT issues as well. It's a really realistic movie and an inspirational one as well. So that's why one reason why I picked it. And also, it's a great soundtrack. Yeah, you know, very funny film.
Okay, let's kind of list off a couple of mine. One is Snow Dogs. I was one of the kids that fell for that trailer of the talking dogs, which happens in one scene, and it's a complete lie because the dream sequence. Our Signs, which was a staple for some reason at my middle school, we'd watch that like at least once a year. I went to a Catholic school, and I think Mel Gibson plays a preacher, so I think that might be why. Blade 2, my favorite Del Toro movie. You get peak Wesley Snipes. Well, not peak. It's a little after the peak. Blade, but you get some great Wesley Snipes.
Is your favorite Del Toro movie?
Yes, I would say so.
All right.
Okay. Have you seen Crimson Peak?
No, I think that's the only one I haven't seen yet.
Play 2.
Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. It might be the bleakest movie I've ever seen, but it's great. It has like, I feel like a Coen Brothers movie kind of, where like the everything that could go wrong does go wrong, and so there's kind of like a it's very bleak, but there's a very dark sense of humor that goes along with it, and it's not for the faint of heart. It will destroy you if kind of be warned if you watch that. Dog Soldiers, the Neil Marshall movie. It's a great werewolf movie. And Russian Ark, which was a quote-unquote film all in one shot that travels through time at this art museum in like Moscow or St. Petersburg, I forgot which one. And it's a good experience, but I don't know if I can say it's a good movie. And it's kind of exhausting to sit through, but exhausting in a good way. It's a really interesting thing to watch. I recommend it if you like artsy stuff, but I don't know. But if you're not into artsy stuff, don't bother watching Russian Ark, because there kind of really is no story. It's just a one-shot movie traveling through time for like an hour, 45 minutes or something.
So don't watch Russian Ark. Got it.
I actually saw Russian Ark. It was pretty good, but I didn't really feel for the story all that much. But it was pretty cool to see it be shot all in one take, I guess.
It's an amazing feat. It's just like, I don't know.
I liked it. Yeah, it is tiring though, in a mental way. So the best movie that came out in 2002 was Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. No, not really.
I saw that in the theater. My dad fell asleep snoring for the last hour.
Everyone saw that in the theater. It was the law. There's some good sci-fi stuff that came out, and since that's what I usually pick on because of, you know, other podcasts that I do.
Equilibrium, I know.
No, that's not what I was going to say.
Oh.
Equilibrium is fine. It's just, it feels a little edgelord. So, three movies that we covered on Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space, the sci-fi podcast I do, that came out in 2002. The Mothman Prophecies, Richard Gere, no tap dancing in this one, unfortunately. Or singing, for that matter. I remembered liking this movie, and then when we rewatched it for the podcast, I was like, this movie sucks.
Joel, you realize this is the second time for a Richard Gere movie?
What?
He is in that one Kurosawa movie.
Oh, yeah. So you're talking
playing
a different podcast completely.
Yes, our first season. Yeah, because Kurosawa cast Richard Gere as a half Japanese, half white person.
No, you're racist. Another movie that we covered that came out in 2002, Star Trek Nemesis, which is the last of the Next Generation Star Trek movies. And it's got a sour reputation, it's not the worst of the three. It has some fun ideas. It doesn't follow through on the execution and kind of tries to pull emotion out of the audience by making some big changes. I mean, they knew it was going to be the last movie when they did it, so they make some decisions. I still like it. I think it's a good watch. And the last one is one that I guarantee most people haven't seen, called Endangered Species. It has a different title in other countries. I can't remember what it is, but it stars Arnold Vosloo as a alien who comes to Earth to hunt this person who's basically like a Terminator ripoff. And as the story goes along, you find out he's like hunting people looking for the perfect specimen for some reason. And Eric Roberts and John Rhys-Davies play these detectives. It is so stupid, but it is a great group watch. And I think it's on YouTube in full. I recommend it if you enjoy stupid, silly movies.
I watched it based off your episode.
Uh-huh. And?
It's... Well, it's really fucking stupid.
Yes, it is.
It's enjoyable.
I mean, it's like a sci-fi original movie, except it's rated R. Because it has nudity for stupid reasons. But, yeah. Like I said, it is fun in the right environment. I wouldn't recommend it as, like, a movie that's good. Other things from 2002 that I like that came out. Panic Room. Frida came out this year. A personal favorite that is kind of embarrassing, but I'll say it anyways, The Count of Monte Cristo. It's, from what I understand, it's not a good adaptation of the book, but I think it's a pretty fun movie. And, I mean, there's a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
There's actually two more movies. There's two more movies in 2002 that I actually like as well.
Go for it.
Red Dragon.
Oh yeah.
I know a lot of people love Manhunter. I love it too, but Red Dragon's also really good. Mainly because of Ralph Fiennes when he plays Francis Holliday. He is so menacing and so scary. But I think the film was like really fast paced. This just really keeps your attention. It may not be everyone's cup of tea, because I know a lot of people prefer Manhunter over Red Dragon. But I don't think it should be canceled out per se. I really enjoy Red Dragon. I tend to watch a little bit more sometimes. And another film, 28 Days Later, that came out in 2002 as well. It was like a zombie film from Danny Boyle. So actually, it might get a sequel, another sequel. And it has like 28 weeks later, yeah. And then it's like it might be another follow-up to the film. But yeah, it was like really creepy, fast-paced, good. I like the editing in that film as well. It just really just keeps your attention, you know. It's just fast-paced, it's scary, it's a creepy story, but I really enjoyed 20 Days Later. And I like Frida as well.
The sequel isn't... Oh yeah, the sequel 28 Weeks Later, pretty good. And you get Idris Elba and some other people before they got super famous in it, like Imogen Poots is in it.
25th Hour, we were talking about how Edward Norton was in like four or five movies this year. Richard Gere, Chicago, Mothman Prophecies, Unfaithful also came out this year. So it was a big year for white men. I don't know what that is. It's weird.
Isn't every year a big year for white men?
One other film that came out this year is Spider-Man from Sam Raimi.
Mm. Never heard of it.
Yeah. He produced the Spike Lee movie. That's it for this. So we're done with 2002. But maybe by the time I drop this, we'll have the Candyman episode done. So, Alexandria, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I do want to plug your site and articles or anything.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as Film and Vinyl, and my blog is filmandvinyl.wordpress.blog is there on my Twitter page. So yeah.
And, Joel, I guess your podcast is still a hiatus.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You can go to pdsmios.com for 168 episodes we did. I mean, it'll be picking up. It just doesn't have a set schedule anymore. But, you know, science fiction, yeah. Please don't send me into outer space. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at JDTMovies.
And the next pairing is 2015 with Chirac and one person here loves. Instead, we're doing Deep Pan, the Cannes winner.
Sure.
Because the Justin Harrison, the cover of that one. Or Spot, if I think Deep Pan's still streaming. So we'll have Justin Harrison for something for this pairing. And that's it. I'm taking a break on my site, JL701 Japanese Cult Cinema. But if anyone here wants to read any of those, go for it. I'm kind of taking a hiatus on writing reviews and prepping for another site thing I'm wanting to do for a few years now. And that's it. And see you guys next time for Candyman or Chirac.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com and Spotify and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.